The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome, welcome again. Nice to see you all. And I so appreciate people coming together and practice together. And I know some people that don't actually necessarily come all the time, but they either A, are listening to the talks later as recordings, or there's maybe just something comforting to know that this is happening and there's the potential to be there, right? That there's this, there's something about the regularity of it that can be supportive, whether one actually goes or not. I say this because there was times at IMC that I used to go regularly, as a yogi, just to go listen to Dharma talks. And I wasn't going as often, but somehow I just found it comforting to know, like, oh yeah, okay, so they're just to know that they were there. So today I'd like to continue talking more about equanimity on this topic that I've been kind of exploring a little bit. And as many of you know, if not everybody, equanimity is... Sorry, I'm going to mute all of us just so that the recording is clear here. Just it makes it easier for our future selves to, there we go. That equanimity is the fourth of the Brahma Viharas, fourth of the heart qualities. I think I used this expression when I taught last on Tuesday. Something about it has this love, this warm heartness and love of the truth. And so that's one way to think about like the truth of how things really are, as opposed to our just wishing that they're different somehow or not really paying attention to how things are. But I also want to highlight another quality in which equanimity can have this warm-heartedness. And that is this movement from trying to control things. It's natural human activity, trying to control things. And the shift from trying to control to maybe connect with what really is, or connect with another, whatever it might be. So this movement from controlling, letting go with that, and instead going towards connection either with ourselves, with what's really happening to ourselves, to what's really happening out there in our environment, or connect with another person rather than just trying to control them, but instead just to connect with them. It's such a big part of equanimity because it points to that sometimes right in the heart of a difficult time. It's often in the difficult times, of course, when we want to control something, but right in the midst of the painful situation, we can find freedom. Because sometimes when it's the most difficult is when it becomes the most clear that we cannot control things in the way that we think we can. And then there can be some letting go. And then maybe there's kind of, not only with this letting go, there can be this wish to connect with what is, what's actually happening, the reality of the moment. This requires a certain amount of self-confidence that we can handle it, that we won't be overwhelmed. Even knowing that this is a possibility to let go of trying to control and instead to connect. So it's not that we let go and then we're just lost, ungrounded. But to let go and to connect. Some people might think about this. Sometimes when we're trying to control is in our minds, so it's a mental event in terms of, well, I should do this or I shouldn't have done that and they better do this. And well, I got to remember to do this. After I do that, I got to do that. You know, that kind of a thing that we get into sometimes when there's some difficulties. And to recognize, oh, you know, I'm trying to control here, but, you know, this isn't going to make things really different here. And it can instead be kind of letting the thinking slow down, a little bit of spaciousness there, and instead to really connect with the bodily experience here, now. What does it feel like? I mean, there's a lump in the throat. Maybe there's a terrible feeling in the gut, you know, these difficulties. Maybe we're on the brink of tears. There's pressure around the eyes. But I'd like to bring in this poem by Rosemary Traumer. I've brought in so many poems by Rosemary Traumer. I just appreciate her poems very much for this. It's called Pushing Buttons. And she starts it with a quote from somebody else. So it starts with this quote: doing something typically feels better than doing nothing. And the quote is attributed to Helen Langer, Harvard psychologist, quoted in The Illusion of Control, Why the World is Full of Buttons That Don't Work. That was on CNN. So that's the beginning of this poem, is this quote. So here's Rosemary Traumer's the rest of the poem. The world is full of buttons that do nothing. Buttons at crosswalks, in elevators, in hotel rooms. Buttons that can be pushed, but in fact have no functionality. The Harvard psychologist suggests that these buttons serve a purpose. They help people feel as if they have some control, she says. It feels good to have something to do. We could, I suppose, make buttons to press for these careening days when we realize just how little control we have. Not over death, not over weather, not over anyone's heart, not even our own. Or we could press our own belly buttons. A reminder, there are a few things we can do. Write letters, walk, say thank you, practice peace, protest, wear a raincoat, take vitamin B, and of course, the most difficult thing of all, to say yes to not being in control. To dance in that uncomfortable place, laughing like a stream. And of course, the most difficult thing of all, to say yes to not being in control. To dance in that uncomfortable place, laughing like a stream. So this is what part of what equanimity is about, is this letting us let go, but still dancing and laughing. You know, it's not that this frigidity or separateness from our experience or from others, but still connecting, but not trying to control. And of course, love and kindness practice can help us with this. So as I have been doing these past few times I've been teaching, is we'll do some equanimity practice. We'll start with some mindfulness practice just to get grounded and settled a little bit. Then we'll do some loving kindness practice to open the heart, to bring in some warmth. And then we'll shift over to some equanimity practice. Okay, so with that as an introduction, we can take a meditation posture. Posture that reflects your intention to meditate. And taking a few long, slow, deep breaths. Letting the breath return to normal. Just feeling into the body, the bodily experience. Noticing how the body feels in a general sense. Is it relaxed or tense? Is it agitated or maybe a little bit tired? Maybe it feels neutral. However it is, can we welcome that experience? Include it into what's happening right now. And resting our attention on the sensations of breathing. Feeling the in-breaths in the chest and the abdomen, maybe with the air moving through the nose. What does it feel like to have an in-breath? What does it feel like to have an out breath? And when the mind wanders, we don't have to make it be a problem. It's what the mind is apt to do at the beginning of a meditation period, maybe the entire meditation period. Just very simply, gently begin again. Feeling, tuning into the experience, of the body breathing. Just a reminder, you can always come back to this practice. If for whatever reason, loving kindness or equanimity practice doesn't feel like the right practice to do. But to begin, the next part of the meditation, we'll do some loving kindness practice, some heart opening, heart warming practice by bringing to mind a lovable being. No need to make this complicated, difficult. Just gonna start where it's easy. With someone, just naturally, you feel warmth or care, respect, kindness, love, goodwill. Whatever words resonate for you. And if somebody doesn't come to mind, it can always be an imaginary. Kittens, puppies, babies. It can be a family pet. It can be somebody you don't have a relationship with, but who has touched your life with their writings or teachings. And connecting with this lovable being. Perhaps visualizing them. And to support our connecting with them in a warm-hearted way, we can say these phrases. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. feeling the warmth, feeling the maybe softness or spaciousness, this lovable being. And can we extend it to ourselves? May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. Of course, we want to send loving kindness to ourselves. May I be safe. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. And then to do some equanimity practice. So bringing to mind somebody who's a little bit bothersome or irksome, irritating a little bit, but you care about them. I'll offer a few phrases. And often with equanimity, we just do one phrase. Or you can do all of them. Whatever resonates for you. I wish you happiness, and I cannot make your choices for you. I wish you happiness, and I cannot make your choices for you. I care about you. And I cannot keep you from difficulties. I care about you, and I cannot keep you from difficulties. Your happiness and unhappiness depend upon your actions, not upon my wishes for you. Your happiness and unhappiness depend upon your actions, not upon my wishes for you. No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are. No matter how I might wish things to be otherwise, things are as they are. the last line of this poem. And of course, the most difficult thing of all, to say yes to not being in control, to dance in that uncomfortable place, laughing like a stream. This idea of equanimity being about moving from controlling to connecting to what's actually happening, or, you know, a big part, of course, of equanimity is to not be off balance, right? Part of the way we define equanimity is to be balanced, which means to kind of be, you know, standing on both feet or grounded or rooted in some kind of way, connected in some kind of way. So it can be helpful to talk about these ideas with others. So I like to put you into breakout rooms. And you can talk about this poem with that I started at the beginning. The world is full of buttons that do nothing, is the first line. I like this idea, but that they, to help people feel like they have control. But instead, kind of equanimity arises when we realize we don't have control. Not in the way that we expect or would prefer or anticipate or something like this. So I'll put you into groups of three or four, and you'll have an opportunity to meet for, we'll say, maybe 14 minutes. So it's an opportunity to say some of these, to share some of your thoughts about this. And no need to say everything all at once. It's really helpful to just say one thing, let it go to the next person. They say one thing, and then goes to the next person, and they say one thing, and then it comes back around. In this way, everybody has an opportunity to contribute. And then it's also an opportunity for you to learn something as opposed to demonstrating how much you do know. And then maybe to create the conditions in which there's something new that happens, maybe something kind of special with everybody adding an ingredient to the soup, so to speak. Okay, so here we go. Okay, so welcome back. Does anybody have a comment or a question or something they'd like to share? No? Yes, Jerry.
The comment, first of all, again, love these groups because it just takes you into the mind of another human being in the most intimate of ways, even though we cross continents and sea and oceans. But the last comment was made, which I was struck by. We seem to want less suffering, but we sure create a lot of it.
Yeah. This is a big part of what the Buddhist teachings are, is that right? We think that we're going to find happiness in this one particular direction, and then turns out that's not what brings happiness or the lack of suffering. And so much, maybe I'll add in kind of like add something with loving kindness practice, is a way in which our minds can settle and our heart can open, and we can feel in the, oh, yeah. This striving to bolster my sense of self, to increase my status, to acquire whatever it is we feel like we have to acquire. It's not until the mind quiets and the heart opens that we start to feel the uncomfortableness of that, always trying to get more of whatever it is. And this recognition, will never end. There will always be more. But sometimes with loving kindness practice, we can feel that, and then we can start to turn towards, oh, but this connecting with other people, just Jerry, as you pointed out, that has some satisfaction. There's something a little bit different and better there, as opposed to just acquiring. But, you know, we can hear this a bazillion times. It's not until we actually have these experiences that the mind and the heart start to behave differently. I would even say it's part of our biology to, you know, want more. It's kind of how evolution, we've evolved from beings that had more food, more sex, more status, and were able to pass their genes on into the next generation. Yes, Greg.
You know, in the group, we were just talking a little bit about sort of difficult, sort of crucible-like experiences. And for some of us, I certainly include me, and then also kind of people in my family, the tendency has been to try and control by thinking, lots of thinking. The sad part of that is that my grandfather, on a personal note, was a pretty intense thinker. You know, he taught at a medical school. He was a lawyer. He was a forensic pathologist. He was also racked by anxiety and died an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And one of my sharpest philosophy professors at Berkeley also died sort of profoundly sad. And surely but slowly, I've begun to learn that this sort of hyper process of thinking maybe ain't going to take us to the promised land. So maybe letting go, letting things unfold. Maybe there's something to be said for just accepting it. I don't know.
Yeah. Or yeah, there, but something happens when there's acceptance. That's a way of stopping to control. And then something else can arise. Things can unfold differently. But I also want to just say, you know, it is such a human experience, right? To want to think our way in and out of stuff because it works. Sometimes it works. It just doesn't work for everything, right? Some things we need to solve by thinking. And so the trick is to recognize, okay, when is thinking the appropriate tool to use here and when is it not? And this, again, you can hear over and over again, but it's not until you try it and experiment and feel it for yourself do you realize, oh, yeah, there's another way to show up here. So we're 2 minutes after the hour. I just want to respect everybody's time. And I also kind of want to acknowledge that, you know, this is a tender topic, but it's also can be such a doorway to greater and greater freedom and peace and ease. It's worth kind of exploring and feeling your way into whatever way, practicing with, journaling about, talking about, whatever it might be. Okay. So if you'd like, we can unmute and say goodbye, and I'll see you all next week. So bye-bye and thank you. Thank you all.
Bye, right, everyone.
Thank you, Diana.
Nice to see you, people.
Thank you, bye. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you, Diane.